Hello, my name is Alexander, and I'm optimistic about all the transformation that I'm seeing throughout so many organizations right at the moment. I know transformation is challenging and it's difficult, but there's so many great examples out there that this can work out beautifully and successfully, and that excites me.
The Optimist. Conversations with leaders and industries shaping Europe's future. Exploring the ideas and innovations driving progress across the continent.
Welcome to The Optimist, presented to you by Tech by Handelsblatt. I'm Felix Seltner, your host, and this is the finale. This is season one, last show, last episode, and I'm so excited to bring you a topic today that kind of wraps up everything we have been talking about so far on The Optimist: transformation. What does it actually mean? Why is it so hard? Why does it fail so many times? And how is it transforming itself in the AI era? This and more. Our guest today is Alexander Lorbeer, who is a seasoned executive making the leap from the publishing industry that he spent a very successful career in to Ada. Ada is a platform that helps people transform organizations. And Alexander shares what he unlearned since joining this new venture, and also what Ada is doing differently to help people transform their teams, their organizations successfully from the inside out. I'm so glad he's on the show today. I'm so glad you're listening. I also want to say thanks to the amazing team at Tech by Handelsblatt and to all our guests who have graced this show with their optimism and brought very personal moments and lots of learnings to this brand new format. Without further ado, enjoy our season one finale with Alexander Lorbeer. Welcome.
Thank you. Great to be with you.
Alexander, we decided on our podcast today to talk about transformation. And this word transformation, I feel like I read, hear, watch in my feeds every single day, but I don't really know what it means. What is transformation? When you talk about transformation, what do you actually mean, Alexander?
Well, I bet there are different ways of describing what transformation is, and I didn't bring a scientific explanation, right? But the way I would describe it is as a whole system change to an organization, right? It's about everything coming together from company culture, business model, structural and organizational setup, business processes, tech, and so on and so forth. And all of these elements have to change at the same time and go hand in hand. And basically, that requires the capacity to continuously and rapidly adapt all these elements at the same time. And that's a huge challenge to many organizations.
And you know what you're talking about. You are a techie that landed itself in the publishing industry, and you digitalized, you transformed an industry that stereotypically is often looked at as a bit slower, a bit more traditional, maybe a bit more conservative, but and on the other hand, had to evolve to reinvent itself over the last decades over and over and over again. And you were at the heart of it. So you clearly have experienced transformation. Have you also ever personally resisted transformation? And if so, what helped you maybe overcome it as a leader, as an executive?
Well, on a personal level, I would say I never really resisted transformation as long as I saw the reason why it is possible, why it was necessary, right? To the contrary, I actually I'm really excited about transforming and managing transformational processes, because it's a really complex challenge, as I pointed out. And doing so successfully, I think, and leading an organization successfully through a transformational process is a huge accomplishment from a managerial and entrepreneurial point of view. And that really excites me. So I'm trying to explain or underscore the point that you know, I think I never was resistant to that. What I could add or might add is that I've observed myself sometimes to be a bit hesitant at the beginning before I kicked off such a process. Because again, it's a huge challenge, right? And once you start it, once you go about it, you want to do it right. And it's a daunting task. And sometimes it also just takes some time, or took me some time, to get my head around, you know, to identify the necessary scope and size of the required change. And when it comes to resistance, I would look at it from a point of view where I was part of a transformational process rather than leading a transformational process. And there have been, in such situations, have been moments where I felt resistancy. And usually that was mostly attached to, I didn't buy into certain reasons, into certain decisions. Things didn't make sense to me. And the lesson that I learned from that is that transformation at the end of the day is about communication. Right? Mm-hmm. You have to explain over and over again why you're doing what you're doing to take everybody along the journey. Mm-hmm.
And you're saying it's a daunting task because as a leader, you're on top of the ship on the bridge and you're turning the wheel and everybody's going into a different direction. And
yes.
Is there something, maybe some business wisdom about transformation? There's all these, you know, smart leadership experts that you can have access to these days, 24/7, showing up on feeds, showing up on YouTube, showing up on podcasts, that spread business wisdom. And I wonder, is there some wisdom, maybe a phrase or something that you thought is totally true before you became a leader yourself and transformed organizations? And now you know that this piece of wisdom is actually complete nonsense. Is there anything?
I would point out one example where I had to learn the hard way, so to speak, a couple of years ago, which is in a transformational process, you should create or build distinct and separate innovation labs or innovation departments, so to not cannibalize your core operations or disrupt your core operations. Mm-hmm. And that actually sounds, well, it is easier to begin with, right? Because you're building something new from scratch while you're still sticking to what you already have and try to preserve. But there's a huge risk to that in the long run, because what you're essentially doing is you're creating two organizations within one, right? The old and the new. And most people don't like to be part of the old, right? So there's this sort of internal conflict in terms of perception. And it also leads to a point where it's much more difficult to transfer all what you're learning and the knowledge that you're gaining in the new setup and transfer that basically to your existing business based on the not invented here syndrome, right? So people from the, let's say, innovation department come up with some great experience and learnings, talking then to people on the other side of the organization, and they say, well, this is not going to work out with us. We didn't invent that kind of thing. Right. So today, and that's basically my learning here, is I would always push for integrating transformational processes across the whole organization. This is much more complex and challenging to begin with, but it has a way better chance to create sustainable and long-term success.
Interesting. I was just reminded when you said innovation departments about these many labs, hubs, garages that were started and launched over the last, I would say, one or two decades in large corporations. And I would say probably 0.something% of them worked. All the others disappeared.
Exactly.
And you just pointed out why that is. It's so tempting to say we have this little new cool speedboat going next to our big tanker, and that's going to show us the way and lead the path into the future. But as you said, then people look at this speedboat and it's like, who is even working there? And how do we know why they're better than us? Or why are we not there? Or how do we even communicate with each other? And it doesn't work. And at some point, the little speedboat sinks or disappears and the tanker just goes its way as it always went.
Now, the tanker tanks as well.
Yeah. Or the tanker even rolls over it. From a leadership perspective, though, why would you say so many leaders fail when it comes to transformation? Because I feel like you just described it from an employee perspective, right? The metrics, the additional work. I feel like all this work is now on my shoulders that I have to do extra. I don't know who these cool new people are, but I'm not part of them. From a leadership perspective, though, what would you say leaders often do wrong or have misconceptions about when it comes to transforming their organization?
It's just very complex. You have to take care of a lot of things at the same time, right? And that's not easy. And you're faced with uncertainty, and also sometimes leaders, they are scared of uncertainty. They want to grip to what they already have or what they know, right? Same with ambiguity. That can be really difficult because it requires you to make very tough decisions, and people shy back from that. And then you're not, you know, deciding on going left or right, and then you're just being stuck. And also in terms of leadership, taking in consideration the emotional toll that is taking on people, that's another key element from a leadership point of view, right? And just under communicating.
Now that you are with Ada, you basically left the book publishing world behind you and you joined a new startup that helps people from large organizations, by now I think thousands of them, to transform their employers, the organizations they're part of, from within, which I think is fascinating. And you basically went from transforming yourself to teaching transformation. So I wonder, what did you have to unlearn? Mm-hmm. Now, did you change from being the captain on a big ship to a much smaller startup that is helping all these other big ships out there to stay afloat?
Yeah, so first off, I'm 100% with you that transformation can only happen from within. There's nobody there that can do it for you, right? And that's something we're really embracing at Ada. And I would describe it in a way that I wouldn't say we teach transformation, but we facilitate transformation or this transformational process from within. And to talk about what I learned along the way, I would like to give just briefly some additional context to what we do at Ada, so I can also then explain what I unlearned, right? So our core transformational program at Ada, the so-called Ada Fellowship, is based on three pillars, and we call them learn, meet, and apply. Learn is about, you know, acquiring necessary transformational skills. Meet is about getting the Ada fellows, the community together, so that people have the opportunity to look beyond their, you know, organizational boundaries, engage with other peoples with similar problems or challenges. And apply is a dedicated 3-month project phase within the fellowship where small teams of fellows run their real time or real use business cases through something that we call the AI Future Lab, which is our proprietary innovation platform and the methodology behind that, and helps them to drive their innovation projects from ideation over validation to an MVP process. So that's our, basically the core program. And within this context, and after having followed and led many fellows through this process and having talked to many of our partners and organizations that we work with, I would call out two things that I had to unlearn. The first is growth happens alone, and that's not true. Right. And with growth, I mean personal growth, but also organizational growth. And that's also why our motto or credo at Ada is growth rarely happens alone. And I'm deeply convinced by now that this is absolutely true. And I observed this over and over again at our community events when Ada fellows come together, right, from very different organizations, very different settings, and they have real meaningful and deep interactions. At the end of the day, they all find out that they mostly share the same challenges. And it's sometimes also helpful to talk to people, you know, realizing, okay, I'm not alone in this world. And also getting these outside perspectives, you know, from people from very different industries. And that's sort of this exchange, a deep exchange, that's where the real learning happens, right? Not from textbooks or just online courses. So that's one thing I had to unlearn or I unlearned. And the second thing I would like to mention is doing things fast is much more important than analyzing and planning. And that doesn't mean that analysis and planning...
That's not a very German thing to say, Alexander.
Yeah, that's why I'm bringing it up. So I think as long as you do not get into this doing or execution mode, as long as you don't take the first step, and even if this first step is not perfect, it's still the right thing to do, because once you start walking, you can actually, you know, learn, adapt, change course, but you have to start walking to actually do that. And that's basically the beginning of transformation that's really, really happening. So you basically have to get outside your analysis and planning mode and really start doing, just take the first step. And that makes such a huge difference. And I see this over and over again with our fellow teams in those Future Lab projects, because they really start doing things and the outcomes are amazing. but it's really about doing and executing.
So now when we think about the current moment that we're in, and this also kind of impacted our podcast, because no matter who we had on the show so far, in the end, the conversation always steered towards AI. Because it seems like when we talk about technology today, there is no bigger player, there is no bigger impact, and there is also maybe no bigger field of misunderstanding than what AI is and what AI does to us. So from your very concrete examples that you already shared, working with the fellows, with the alumni at ADA across these many organizations, can you give me a few examples on how you see AI is actually transforming what they do, transforming maybe them as leaders, transforming the organizations that they're working in, transforming the way they work every day? Just to help us understand the impact that you're seeing specifically.
Sure. So first, I would say it's around decision speed, right? Because working with AI models just frees up so much of your time that you can use then for more relevant tasks yourself. So it just frees up time, which gives you speed. Just think about those 100 pages of PowerPoint that you had to read through before you walked into a meeting, a decision meeting. And instead of spending the time reading that, now you can use AI to get yourself a like 5-minute audio briefing as a summary, right? So you have more time to spend on figuring things out rather than reading. So that's the whole, you know, topic of decision speed and everything that comes with it. The second piece is decision quality, right? Because from what I'm seeing, and I'm also experienced myself, you can collaborate with AI models to sharpen your own thinking, right? So whatever sort of strategic challenge you're working on, be it, you know, defining a new sales strategy, coming up with new business KPIs for your specific business model, up to something like, you know, you're planning performance review conversations with your team, right? You can collaborate with AI and to challenge your own thinking, to identifying weak spots in your own arguments, to, you know, support you with coming up with a new and creative angles towards your own thinking. At the end of the day, it just improves the quality of your decisions. And the third example I wanted to bring in here is think about AI as a coach for you as a leader, right? Irregardless of, for example, you want to acquire a new skill, you want to deep dive into a certain topic, you can use AI to coach you through that process. Up to just a very small and specific example that I find fascinating is you can also have AI analyze your conversations and basically give you hints and tips about how can you improve moving forward. What did you do good? What was, you know, bad argument? Did you have too much or too little airtime in the conversation? And so it really helps you on the fly to improve as a leader or, in that example, as a communicator.
Just thinking about ChatGPT analyzing the Optimist and saying, Felix, I could do this much better. Why don't you just let AI host the podcast? Are you using this when you do, for instance, job interviews, or you host your Sure Fix meetings with your team?
Well, I mean, it can be tricky in terms of regulatory elements, right? Especially when it comes to HR-related topics, for example. But within our team, as everybody's very open to, you know, innovation and collaborating with AI, we actually constantly do that, right? That we record our meetings. We use that not just to create summaries and automated follow-up action items, but also to sort of identify, did we miss something in this conversation? What could we have done differently? Just to continuously learn from that experience. There's just a certain element to that you also might need to be careful about.
Absolutely.
So if you ask, for example, ChatGPT to analyze the Optimist, the good thing is the AI models are usually really friendly, right? So it's not going to come back to you and say, you know, this is all not working out. It will tell you what you're doing great, and it might come up with a couple of suggestions what you can do even better. Yeah.
What I actually tried with a podcast was I uploaded the transcript and I asked ChatGPT to identify less interesting parts. Mm-hmm. And what I realized was that the AI finds the more human parts less interesting than the factual parts. So when somebody talks about their life or their everyday or their feelings, ChatGPT thought that was less interesting than the facts they had to share. And that gave me some thought because mm-hmm. I felt we maybe have still sort of an advantage as humans. We can read whether a conversation is warm and engaging and gives us images rather than just, you know, splurting out the facts. So it kind of made me a little bit more optimistic about hosting as a human.
Depends on your target audience, right? If your target audience is AI agents, then might be a different story. But as long as it's humans, I'm absolutely with you.
And we will also see a lot of AI to AI media, which is also something that I wanted to ask you on. Now, there have been conversations and even experiments about entire organizations or teams being led by an AI. Because as you said, you can have yourself, build yourself a little coach that, you know, gives you decision-making advice that helps you get through tricky conversations or situations. So why not dedicate your entire leadership to a chatbot? What do you think about that? What do you think about an AI leading an organization entirely? And is this being experimented with right now as we speak?
That's a fascinating topic, right? You're referring to the rise of AI agents, basically very specialized AI models for certain tasks. And in general, this is going to have a huge impact on how we work, how we collaborate, and at the end of the day, also on how organizations are going to be structured and led. So what I would expect in the not too distant future, having mixed teams actually becoming the norm rather than the exception. With mixed teams, I'm meaning teams consisting of human beings as well as specialized AI agents. And that alone is going to create a lot of fascinating questions also from a leadership point of view. So as a leader, how do you lead such a team, right? Do you, what about team bonding? How do you create incentive schemes for such a mixed team? And all sort of things, super fascinating. And in this context, obviously, as you brought it up, Felix, you could also think about a CEO AI agent that leads the whole organizations. And as you pointed out, there actually have been experiments on that, or experiments are still on the way, and some research on that with actually pretty surprising positive results. But still, especially when it came to at least those experiments that I saw, especially when something really unexpected happened, then the human was definitely way better in terms of leading through a moment of crisis. Think about an event such as COVID, for example, as the AI CEO. But I wouldn't rule it out that this is going to come, but I still think it's quite in the distant future from my personal point of view. First of all, because I think we still want human direction when it comes to purpose and ethics. And also, I personally have a hard time imagining human beings being excited about working for an AI boss, right? But this might change over time and, you know, never rule out the exceptions.
Right. We are now seeing surveys that many young people can imagine having AI friends. So why not having an AI employer? Do you have an AI teammate at Ada?
We use various AI agents for dedicated tasks. It's not yet that we would consider them as real teammates, right? But I would say this is about to come, right? But we're experimenting a lot with that for our own, you know, business processes.
Because I was just thinking, if I take my remote daily team to a nice offsite, to a hotel to, you know, figure out strategy and spend time with each other, would I invite the AI agent along?
Yeah, one of the questions, right? I mean, how would they feel about if they are left out, right? So, I don't know. Do you have like virtual coffee dates with your AI team buddy? I don't know. What do you do, like also from an HR point of view, right? If the AI agent misbehaves, underperforms, what do you do? Do you put them on a performance improvement plan? Do you terminate the employment? I don't know. But, just want to illustrate some questions that will come up, which, again, I found fascinating.
But it brings us to the point of considering what is left for us. Critical thinking is brought up everywhere where AI conversations happen. And we as humans tend to like kind of almost like cling onto it. We're like, this is the thing that we can, that AI can't. This is our AI proof skill and will never leave us. Is this something that you agree with? And especially you have so many, as we said, thousands of mid-career leaders, professionals that learn with you, with your platform. Is it something that they can, acquire? Is this a skill that can even be taught or developed, or are you just like shaped as a young person and you either have it or not? Sorry, in times of AI, not something you can get. So what do you think about critical thinking in times of AI as a skill?
When it comes to can you still learn this in your middle ages, from all what I know based on neuroscience and the neuroplasticity of our brain, actually we can, right? We can do so well into our 70s. So there's no like natural restriction on that as we gain experience throughout our career. But again, like with every skill, it's a muscle that needs to be trained. If you don't train it, it won't develop. And that's actually where I see a challenge and the risk, because as the outputs of AI models become more better and better, it's actually pretty enticing to just take what you're getting as granted. And I'm observing that sometimes with myself, right? So I'm interacting and collaborating with an AI model, look at the output and think, this sounds really convincing. And then if you don't start challenging that yourself critically, right, then actually you're not gaining the skill, right? Because it's just going to be lost. And I think, and that's what I mean and think why critical thinking is so important, because you still have to challenge critically what output you're being faced with. I would also like to point out two additional skills that I think are going to be even more relevant as we move forward. The first is intuition, something, right, that we learn over time. It's based on our experience, our gut feeling, which is key important, especially for leaders, from my point of view. And that's a quality that AI, I think, cannot bring to the table. And the other key skill that I wanted to mention, I would describe it as self-awareness. And by that, I mean being self-aware of your own biases, right? So whatever output you're getting from an AI model, it's based on your input, right? And your input is based on your own bias, the way you look at the world, the way you do things. So just as an example, if you're working on a strategic task and you're more the very visionary, creative type of person, you will get a very different output on the same question compared to somebody who is more like the structural business model, step-by-step kind of person, right? And that's what I mean with being self-aware. Be self-aware of your own bias when you collaborate with AI models. And if you want to create surprising and new answers, you have to overcome your own bias, or you have to collaborate with other human beings that bring a different perspective to the table than yourself.
But the big thing that you pointed out in the beginning is this bias that the AI creates within us. I think our previous guest, Matthias Binho, called it this kind of trust in AI that you develop because you get answers that you really like. And that turns into a bias because you think the AI is giving me the truth. It's giving me the right thing. It's giving me what I need. There's nothing more than I need. And you stop your critical thinking because of that.
That's what I mean. That's sort of the challenge or the risk that I see, right? That you stop critically challenging what you're getting out from your collaboration.
And how do you teach that then? Or how do you facilitate? How do you enable the people that come to Ada to strengthen their critical thinking instead of weakening it, which is so tempting right now?
Yeah, I think it starts all with being mindful of that. This is something that might be happening. And then also just, you know, experimenting and exercising around that. So, for example, you get an output by an AI. You just basically, it's a simple task to just take it, but put your own critical thinking on top of that. Give it a different spin. Go back. Real collaboration rather than just you having a question and then just receiving the answer and taking that, right? It's like with pretty much everything else. It's first about being mindful of what's going on there and then training how you react to that or how you're tackling this challenge.
Mm-hmm. So you could, for instance, prompt something and then ask for the exact opposite, which is hard to do with a human, maybe easier to do with a chatbot. Tech is now the tech platform that we are meeting on for The Optimist is now, after the conference, turning into a year-round community of leaders. Now, you are building, facilitating your own community within Ada. And I was wondering, If you have maybe any advice for the tech platform to close our podcast today, is there something that we can learn from Ada in making sure that leaders stick together, that they talk about their struggles, and that they help each other transform?
I think you guys are already doing a pretty good job in with this ecosystem that you're building. And if I would pick out one piece of recommendation, I would say within your community events, make sure that you go beyond inspiration and, you know, superficial networking gatherings, right? Get people together and facilitate a process where they can have honest and open and meaningful conversations. Ideally, bring them together, work on something together, right? So at the end of the day, real action beats networking drinks, in essence.
Alexander, thank you for being our guest today on The Optimist. Honored to have you. As you are closing our first season, you know, all eyes are on you right now. Do you have any final message to the tech community out there?
Yeah, go out there and meet, right? Connect, go beyond the coffee dates, learn from each other, because as I said at the beginning, growth rarely happens alone, and this is really true. So that's my call to action. Growth rarely happens alone.
Thank you, Alexander.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. Thanks for your time. Bye-bye.
For listening to The Optimist. For more insights and updates about tech, visit us at tech-europe.org. The Optimist is produced by Tech by Handelsblatt. Music by Christian Heinemann. Stay curious.